Hello and welcome to episode 9 or 19 of Discover Podcasting. I am your host for today, Rich Yamamoto, and with me I have Nick and Mr. Taylor as my co-hosts.
Okay,
and it's really cool because our next week's episode will be episode 20 for the 2020-2021 school year that we've been hosting since 2019 to 2020. So we're going to have something really special for that 20th episode. But today, our guest is Dan Oates, who is the director of SIVIS, which is Space Camp for Interested Visually Impaired Students. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Well, how are you doing today?
Oh, just fine. Fine. Just another day in paradise.
Yep. There you go. Well, so I'm going to jump right in here. How did you start? How did you get SIVIS started, and what were you doing before SIVIS?
Well, it's a great misconception that I started it. Just because I coordinated, I didn't start it. The program started back in about 1989 when the CEO of Space Camp, a gentleman by the name of Ed Buckby, was getting concern over people with disabilities not being able to participate. He was from my hometown here in West Virginia, just a little town of about 2,000 people. And he got on the right track, went to the Army, ended up being the public relations director with Wernher von Braun, Mercury astronauts, and then rolled over to the director of the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. So he kept getting inquiries about blind people being participants in Space Camp. And one lady went so far as to register. And at the end of registration, they told her she couldn't come because she was blind. Now, that's 1989. That's a different time in our history of disabilities and stuff. So she wrote a letter to the congressman thinking it was NASA operated, and Space Camp is not NASA operated. I've always said if Space Camp relied on the federal government to provide their funding, they'd have been closed years ago. So they actually operate under the state of Alabama as a not-for-profit. So Mr. Buckby received a letter from some lady up in New England who was blind and couldn't come, and he, instead of throwing it away, he picked it up and read it a couple times and then called his old buddy, who was the superintendent of the West Virginia School for the Blind, which is about 200 yards out my back window there. And that's where I worked for 30 years as an O&M instructor and an outreach person. So the program started in 89 with a trip by two administrators and a teacher, that was not me, went to Alabama and sort of checked the place out. They decided we'd go in 1990 for the first time and take 20 kids from our school. We were funded by the Tubert Foundation in Huntington, West Virginia, which continues to this day to fund us 30 years later. The trip was very successful with the kids. It was a long 2-day bus ride. I was included at the last minute to go as a chaperone, which was something that I'd always wanted to do. I was very disappointed that I wasn't included. And then later on, I was asked to go, and I said, yes, I was glad to go. And I'd met Mr. Buckby a number of times here and when he came home, and was always after him to do something for kids with disabilities. But I wasn't the one who, I'm not the one who was responsible for that. So we went down, the kids did great. We insisted that our pilot or that our commander be blind, and which sort of freaked out Space Camp a little bit because they didn't know if that was going to work. We had all of our Braille prepared, all the large print prepared. We brought technology, as it were, in 1990, and the kids did a great job. They really did, and it sort of proved to the Space Camp people at that point in time that this was something that could work, and we could do this, you know, off and on as much as we wanted to. So we've chosen to do it once a year, and we do it at the last week of September. And looking forward to this year at this point.
Oh, yeah. Because we didn't do it last year, did we?
No, did not.
That's right. Well, that's a really cool story. I didn't know that. I didn't know that NASA wasn't a part of funding the U.S. Space and Rocket Center Space Camp. I didn't know that they weren't part of funding that. It's pretty interesting.
Well, it's actually every NASA center. There's 13 in the United States. Every NASA center, by federal law, has to have a visitor center. So Space Camp, or that campus that you were on, is actually two separate businesses. It's the U.S. Space and Rocket Center is the museum portion, and then U.S. Space Camp is attached to the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. So NASA runs the museum part. That's their responsibility as their visitor center, because Marshall Space Flight Center is about 13 miles from there. And that way they can keep people off of the federal property and not have them, not worry about the security and such. And then
right, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then Space Camp is attached to that, uses their exhibits and uses the museum. And a lot of the exhibits are retired NASA property. So while it's not directly funded from NASA, certainly NASA is a participant in the event.
Yeah. I remember something about that when I was, when I was attending in the Advanced Space Academy as part of Elysium in 2019.
Yeah.
So when did it start to become a global event for people outside of the US to come join CIVIS?
It started in the later part of the 1990s. I was lucky enough to get a Fulbright scholarship to go to Australia and present on Space Camp and do science experiments and activities with blind kids back in those days. And I met a gentleman at Space Camp. I worked there for 20 seasons. Every summer I would go down and work as a crew trainer for the teacher program. And I met this guy from Australia who said, come on over and we'll get you lined up, you know. And how many times do someone invite you to another country and you can't go? But it worked out that I could go. I got funded to go. And he had us do things with kids who were blind, kids who were not blind. And then I met with some parents' organizations and things. And then the following year, he wrote a Fulbright scholarship for me, which I think was around 96. And I went over and spent 30 days there. I met with parents' groups, vision teachers, dog guide schools, schools for the blind, all up and down the East Coast. And really got a lot of interest generated. And that's when that started kicking in to where we got kids coming from Australia. And then I think this is probably close to 10 years, about 2010, 2011, the St. Louis Lighthouse for the Blind in St. Louis, Missouri, contacted me and said that they would like to donate $50,000 to CIVIS. And fund kids from other countries. He felt that his kids from St. Louis, many were inner city kids, could not afford to go to other countries, and they would benefit largely from kids from other countries coming to Space Camp. So every year we have scholarship contests, and in 2019 we had 13 countries attend, and last year we were pretty close to that, but they couldn't come.
Right. And that was really cool, too, because we had, I think, six different countries in my group where we all kind of were hanging out all week together. And a lot of us formed really close bonds with other people from outside of the U.S. I'm still best friends with one of the guys from New Zealand and one of the guys from Greece. And we have our own Instagram group chat that's still constantly being swarmed with messages from everybody and everywhere across the globe. And it's been really cool to get to know those guys and to get to really work with them for a full week, and you know, get to engage with our other blind and visually impaired peers. Yeah. That was a really good experience for me.
People often ask me what I get out of this, and stories like that is what I enjoy. I mean, if you guys just went to camp, left, and went home and didn't enjoy each other's company, now that there's social media and that sort of stuff, that's That's great for me. I think that's what the basic program is there's all obviously science and math, but there's that intrinsic part of kids getting to know each other from different countries and bonding over if it's something, you know, a common interest. If it's I've had kids bond over the fact that they've never met another child with the same eye condition before. So,
oh yeah,
I mean, it's just really interesting the way, and I keep telling Space Camp, they're just kids, you know, don't get hung up on the whole blindness thing. They're just kids who want to come to Space Camp, have a good time, enjoy themselves. And at this point in time, I'm the only group leader. That's what to Space Camp, I'm a group leader. And they have about 500, 600, 700 groups a year. And SciViz is just one group, but I'm the only group leader they allow to do their team selection. So I make sure that if we have international kids in a particular program like advanced or academy or camp, I always try to make it so that I've at least got one international student on one team and try to split the country up. Kid from Massachusetts may be on a team with a kid from Arizona, just so they get that variety of personality and culture and that sort of thing.
Right. And I've really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed getting to know, you know, everybody from across the world and across the different states. So the simulations are really kind of an interesting part of Space Camp, you know, the multi-access trainer and the scuba tank and the other simulations that I honestly can't think of the names right now. You want to talk about those a little bit?
Yeah. How they work? Yeah, the MAT, the 1/6 chair are the ones that you guys normally use. The space shuttle simulator is the cockpit, and everything there that you participate in is called a simulator. The ones that are most popular is the MAT, and I always explain that as like being put in the middle of a gyroscope and spun around in all different directions. You don't go in the same direction twice. So therefore you don't get dizzy, your middle ear fluid does not shift due to that, and you don't get sick. The 1/6 chair is a spring operated chair that's connected to the ceiling, and it displaces about 83% of your weight. So if you're a 120 pound person and you're only gonna move around like you're 20 pounds. And that's what it would be with the gravity on the moon. So you're going to get a lot of bounce and a lot of distance between your steps when you're on that. So there's also the moon shot, they call it the space shot, where you go from Earth to 150 feet in about 3 seconds.
And then that was fun.
Yeah. You drop about halfway down, and there's a period of about a second that you're actually weightless. You actually come up off of the seat during your free fall. And that gives you a very brief way to experience microgravity, which that's about the only way on Earth that you can do that, other than jumping out of a plane. And that's not really it, because you've got the atmosphere against you. So
right.
those are the main ones down at Aviation Challenge, the Top Gun fighter pilot program they have. They have different ones. They have the cockpit simulators where the kids fly and they dogfight. They have the tower, which has a parachute harness that you go backwards into the water on. They have the Area 51 courses with the called the Pamper Pole, which is a 40-foot telephone pole that you climb on and stand on top of the pole. And then there's the rock wall that you climb up and take the zip line off of as well.
Oh yeah, I remember those. Those are called Area 51, you said?
Yeah, that's Area 51, they call it.
All
there's
right.
The high ropes course and then the low ropes course. Advanced Academy does the high ropes.
That's right, okay. I remember that. Those are fun times.
Oh yeah, that's truly when the team bonds, because they have to really watch out for each other.
I was always nervous going up there because one of the guys was always into pranks, and I was worried that he was not always going to take the rope very seriously, but it was a lot of fun up there either way. And it was a true blast. So what were some of the challenges that made of making the different simulations accessible? I know that the computers for the different missions had Braille on them, but was there any other things that needed to be modified for people who couldn't see?
Well, Richard, it was a gradual process. The first year we went, we just had one program. We had Academy. And that was basically, we didn't have a lot of opportunity to go down and look at their equipment or their software. We took our Braille, we took our large print and did the best we could. As technology improved and as we got smarter and the space camp became more cooperative, we were able to get some time with the administration. They rewrote their software for all of their missions. A company in Texas does that called Binary Star. Binary Star wrote that software for us. And Jim Allen, who you probably met at Space Camp, he's from the Texas School for the Blind. He's the technology consultant for us. He got with Binary Star, and they got speech involved in there and screen enlargement software. So that's all in there right now. I mean, you can walk in the door now and have that anytime. And it's just a keystroke that brings it up. The Braille and the large print, we are in the process of switching over to UEB right now, simply because we can't afford to do it all at one time. It would cost Space Camp thousands and thousands of dollars to have all their stuff put in UEB at once. We didn't do any last year, which probably put us a year behind, but anything we produce now is in UEB. We have telescopes, magnifiers on site. We have partnered with Enabling Technologies, which I think now has changed to another company name, I'm not sure, but they provide us with about six refreshable Braille keyboards now as part of a corporate sponsorship. We have a couple of the enhanced vision products for screen enlargement, magnification, CCTVs. So we sort of go along as we can. Every year we learn something. We have a tendency to ask a lot of questions of the chaperones and find out what's not good and what is good.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I remember there was a lot of different Braille materials that were used for the different, a lot of times for the different missions that we were on. So like the medic, I guess, I'm not quite sure what they call them, but the medics had Braille books that kind of gave you a list of home remedies. Right. For different ailments. you had like the warning sheets, so like what the warnings meant on the computer. Yeah. Screens.
Caution and warning. Yeah.
Yes, caution and warning.
Yeah.
Now the screen reader on the computer was very interesting to me. I remember you said something on the Blind Abilities podcast that Space Camp installed that themselves. Is that correct?
Yeah, Binary Star did their own. They didn't use a package product that's already out there. They went in and went on and did their own. Like I said, Jim Allen helped with that. So that's about the limit of my knowledge when it comes to that. If you want to do an interesting podcast, talk to Jim Allen.
Okay.
he'll tell you all about it and a lot more.
All right. But that had nothing to do with like other companies then, if I'm understanding that right?
No, it was not a commercial product that anybody had for the blind community.
Okay. So you were a chaperone, correct?
Yeah, the first year, yes. Well, actually first 2 or 3 years I was a chaperone until I got my head wrapped around it.
Okay. Is there a favorite memory that you've had as a chaperone and now as the group leader from CYBUS from the past 30 years? Is there a favorite memory? Or
how much time we have? I mean, every year there's something that sort of gets me through the week. First year we went, I had a student who was totally blind who put the helmet on the spacesuit backwards. So he's actually staring right at the plastic and the open part was behind his head. And of course he didn't have a clue. Well, we laughed at that a lot. And, the bus ride down was a great time with the kids. We had a good time there. We get other situations. Like a parent came in one time with a 12-year-old boy who was in a wheelchair, came in, registered him, left the boy on the floor in the corner, took the wheelchair and went home. So here we had this kid who was immobile. And so we had to go find a wheelchair and get the kid up and moving. And, we weren't told anything about the child. So, that's sort of the downside. About 3 years ago, I had a kid stop me there in the dining area and say, could I talk with you a minute? And I said, yes. And he said, well, I'd like to thank you for creating Planet Blind.
Oh, and yes.
And I said, what do you mean by that? And he says, well, this is such a neat place and everything is here for us. No one asked me about my sunglasses. No one asked me why my eyes are funny looking. No one asked me why I use a cane or why I use a telescope, why I do this or why I do that. Everybody's on the same page. Nobody questions us. It's a week that we can come and relax and not have to worry about that part of our lives. And it's like being on another planet where, we don't get to do this very often. And I just want to thank you for doing it. And I thought, wow, that's one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
Thank him. Yeah.
So Planet Blind is an awesome name.
Yeah, I thought it was. I wish I thought
that. That is fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So, well, are there any plans for Cybus in the future to maybe expand more on maybe other places that you can host or more times during the year?
Well, I don't think we can do it other times of the year. Our population would really have to increase. We're at about 160 to 180 every year now. Space camps, as far as the accommodation factor is at space camp with what we do and how many simulators we use, and how many monitors we need, what software is available, all those things that occur behind the scene, our maximum is 256 kids. We've been over 200 maybe once or twice, which is fine. We can handle 200. But to do it another time of the year, Jim could come, I could come. Trina Britcher, who's our material specialist, just retired, she can come now. But a lot of chaperones couldn't bring kids twice. They'd have to pick one or the other. And then we would drop from probably 180 kids down below 100. And I really think one of the powers of the program is having so many kids there at one time.
Okay.
And not having, 50 or 60 kids. And then, 2 months, 3 months later, having another 50 or 60, 70 kids. So I like the fact that there's so many kids there. And it takes a lot of time for space camp to get ready for us as well.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. We've certainly thought about it, but something that we've really spent a lot of time with.
Okay. But do you happen to know when space camp started? Yes. Not specifically Cybus, but Space Camp.
1982.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Patrick, and I'm late, and I'm here.
Yeah, but you're okay, in school, cool. So that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have the same volunteers each year?
To a point. I sort of have my own staff with Jim and Trina and Joni. They come every year. The chaperones vary between the schools. And they bring, people always ask me, how can I come to space camp as an adult? How can I do this? How can I do that? So if you want to come to Cybus and you're an adult and you're a teacher, then you have to bring kids. We don't do just volunteers who walk in the door and want to work that week because it's a state agency and they have to go through a volunteer training course. They have to be vetted. They have to have a security background and all that. So it's not a matter of just a volunteer coming in and assisting.
Okay. That actually makes a lot of sense because the volunteers and the chaperones know the students the best.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I like to think a lot of things we do make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So one of the cool things that Space Camp did when I was there was each meal was based off of a different country or a different culture. What have you had a meal there that you really liked or learned about a culture that was interesting?
Yeah, my problem is I like all the meals.
There you go.
Yeah, it was a number of years ago. We're probably talking 10 years ago. The food was simply kid food, hot dogs, hamburgers, French fries. And they got a chef in and they started looking at Space Camp as a whole. What are the complaints? What are the things that people complain about the most? And most people complained about the food. So they went all out and got a chef to come in and start planning the meals, started looking at what countries are on the space station and start looking at getting those meals better designed towards those countries just simply because the kids enjoy it. And that's one of the things now that gets the highest marks is the meals. I enjoyed the Chinese. One year we had the lady, the chef wanted to order fortune cookies that had Braille fortunes in them. So we did that. And we usually have Mexican Wednesdays with tacos, which are good. So yeah, all that's pretty good.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, the food there was fantastic. I will give it high marks for that.
Well, they deserve it.
Absolutely. So what is kind of something that others can get out of Space Camp besides the meeting other people and the simulators? Is there what else can people expect to find at Space Camp in Cybus?
Well, I think it's a personal challenge for a lot of kids because many times kids, and I don't know if this relates to you guys or not, but as you grow up and you're in a home and you have siblings, you're really not given a responsible role in the home. You don't do the dishes, you don't take out the garbage, you don't mow the lawn. You know, there's all those things that maybe your sighted siblings do or your sighted friends do. And people, kids who are blind don't necessarily get that. And if you're in a residential school, you have certain responsibilities, but not all kids are in residential schools. So when they get there, they find very quickly that as part of the team, other people rely on you. And if you're there and you're just kidding around and stuff, odds are someone on your team is going to be the first ones to talk to you, not the crew trainer, not a chaperone, because you guys want to have the best mission. You want to have the best program you can have. And if someone's just sort of carrying on and not really paying any attention, then it's usually something that the kids handle and not the staff. So I think the personal responsibility is good. We also have Dr. Craig Moore come from Marshall Space Flight Center, who's blind, and he works for NASA. And he talks to you guys about how he got to where he was and how he got to be working at NASA and being blind. And then Jim also puts together the phone conference with NASA employees from around the United States who are blind. And you all get to have an opportunity to talk with them.
I remember the phone conversation. That was like the last full day that we were there.
That was before graduation.
Yep, that was right before graduation.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pat.
Since we're talking about like simulations, are there any like food simulations or like what people may eat in space or any of that?
Well, there are some briefings where they sometimes have depending on what program you're in, what briefing you're in, they may have the food packs from back during the Mercury days that they pass around and show you. Sometimes they get the food trays from Marshall, which have the dehydrated foods that you can feel and touch and pass around and get the idea. But as far as, you know, eating what they hydrate in space, because that's the majority of their food, is hydrated food up there. There is not an opportunity to eat that there.
I know that there was one when we were on the simulated ISS where we were to make different snacks or whatever. There was like this Braille book of different, I think they called them like space snacks. I can't remember exactly, but we were able to microwave them and eat them.
Nice.
Which is pretty interesting. So yeah, that was fantastic. I think one of the coolest things about Space Camp as a whole is a lot of it is student run. So like the, a lot of the teams are all kind of ran by the students, and there's not really a lot of there's staff participation to a point, but a lot of it is you know, is us working together and team building and, right, you know, asking each other for help instead. And I think that really helps you grow as a person.
I would have to agree with you. We take great pride in that, is to have, we do an in-service with the staff before you guys come in. And once again, we try to make the point that you guys are just kids. You don't need to be treated any differently because you're blind. And whatever the rules are and whatever the procedures are during the rest of the year should be the same things for the SciBiz kids. So we would prefer them to let you guys run your missions the same way that any other group that comes in and does. And I'm a firm believer that if you go in and have a perfect mission, you don't have anything to laugh and talk about afterwards. If you leave somebody in the cargo bay, if you leave a mission specialist in the cargo bay and you land with them dangling from the safety line, and you'll laugh about that more than you would if your mission was absolutely perfect.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. And those are the fun things you can always look back on and have a good time with.
We would always laugh about when people had to fake illnesses.
Yeah.
And like we would, when someone had manic depression and was screaming like their heads off in the control room and like just on the floor writhing in fake pain and screaming. And we got out of there and we were just like, what was that?
Yeah, we've over the years, we have done all sorts of things. We used to beat our fist on the side of the space station modules. Like if there's a meteor shower coming, we would go in, say there's a radiation storm, put all you guys inside the closet with the blankets over you so you didn't get radiation poisoning. And we would sneak in and then TP the entire place with wet toilet paper and say the toilet backed up. And then, of course, blind kids coming out, feeling wet toilet paper in their face. That was, that was cool. So we've sort of been told to tone it down a little bit over the years. So
that's gotta be hysterical though.
We've had a good time.
As someone who is totally new to Space Camp, are there any like computer related, say, missions or like anything you do with computers, maybe like basic coding or something?
A lot.
There's no coding to speak of, but there's a lot of computers there. All your missions are run by computers that the students operate.
Yep.
So there's a lot going on there. Space Camp has had before the COVID, when they closed for COVID, they had a coding computer security camp for kids. Now, we didn't get a chance to look at that for adaptations, but teachers from the University of Alabama at Huntsville came over and taught that class, and the kids actually made a computer and worked together as teams. And it was called a sort of like a hacker's camp, and you'd learn how to set up security and stuff. So I don't know if that's going to continue. I know they're going to start off pretty slim as far as their programming goes, and maybe over the next 3 or 4 years they'll do something with that again. I'm not sure.
Okay.
We'd love to adapt that for you guys.
And I know the keyboards were that had Braille labels on them, which is pretty cool. And their built-in screen reader is also very very nice. Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot of cool missions and simulations and interactions at Space Camp that a lot of people who have gone to it have very much enjoyed. And so yeah, I really enjoyed my time, and you know, maybe someday I'll come back work, like because I plan to pursue an education degree and get my TSBI certification. So maybe I may be able to come back with a group of my own.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. We hope to be there.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Sorry about that, Rich. What would be like, what's kind of the future of Space Camp? Do you have like ideas for new simulations you're going to try or any of that?
Well, that's not up to me. Space Camp has an entire simulations team that they are constantly thinking about that. They're having to, as the space shuttle retired, they had to start looking at like the Constellation capsule and, you know, all the new stuff, get rid of more of the space shuttle simulators, maybe pull in a Dragon X kind of thing, you know, another simulator there. So they're constantly redoing the curriculum, which for them and, you know, the majority of the kids, that's a good thing. For us, it puts us in a tailspin because we have to produce all the materials to go with that. And it gets quite extensive at times. Trainer Britcher is our material specialist, lives here in the other side of West Virginia. And she's amazing at all the stuff she does to get those dots under your all's fingers. But every little change is a ripple effect to us.
That makes a lot of sense. Because with making the proper accommodations and the accessibility adjustments that would need to be made. If there's a student who is maybe possibly considering coming to Space Camp for the first time, coming to SIVUS for the first time with their group, and they're a little nervous, what advice would you give them?
Well, it depends on their age. If they're a camp child who would be grades 4 through 6, I prefer that they have spent some time away from home before they come, just so they don't get there and get homesick. We had a kid come a number of years ago and was just absolutely miserable and parents had to come get him, and he hadn't been away from home. And that's not fair to the child. That's not fair to the parents. That's not fair to the team. As you get older, and especially residential school kids are used to being away from home, so I don't so much concern myself there, but it does have some impact. It's a new environment. You're on your own. You have to really know your daily living skills, because they come in and wake you up in the morning. And from that point on, it's up to you to get dressed, get to the bathroom, take care of your needs there, brush your teeth, get your shower, all that, get back to the room and be downstairs in time for breakfast, and the same at night. So if your daily living skills aren't really honed, then maybe you should really concentrate on those for another year before you come. I get parents wanting to come with their child. And I say, well, no, I don't, we don't do that. And they go, oh, I don't know if that's a good thing. If my child will get along without me. And I say, well, if your child can't get along without you, then that's not a time for them to come to Space Camp. So that's not the case, they say. So I think the parent wants to come as bad as the child does.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Who's the youngest person you've had at Space Camp, or like what ages?
This is grades 4 through 12. So because we have a special program, that's how it's classified. We don't do the things like the standard Space Camp does. Since we have a special program, we are allowed certain adaptations that other programs would not be. And one of them is allowing kids who are older to come. We'd still like them to be in high school, But, you know, as you know, some residential school kids are 20, 21 years old. So space camp wouldn't hold them to the same limit as an 18-year-old. And then we also end up with kids who maybe are in college for a year and just found out about SciViz and want to come really, really bad. And we also end up with international kids that don't follow the same age groupings per grade that we have here in the United States. So space camp allows us to be flexible in that regard.
Okay. So no younger than fourth and no older than 12th. Is that correct? And that's only for space camp itself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's just for camp, grades 4 through 6. And okay. Then grades 7 through 9 are academy, and grades 10 through 12 are advanced. Now, of those two programs, academy and advanced academy, as you know, in your school and in public school, there are certain kids who are 16 years old and are not on academic standards. To get into a program that had a concentration of higher math, higher science, they'd be very uncomfortable there. So space right. camp, once again, allows us to place those kids into an academy program, which has a safer curriculum for them. Or we okay. can always suggest Aviation Challenge, because it's really, it's academic, but not so much book learning. It's more always related more to Boy Scouts, outdoor camping activities, water activities, that sort of stuff, playing video games, you know, in the simulators is all that is. But so we try to make sure that every kid is in a situation that has a positive environment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you mentioned cool. you guys have like technology and such. Is there any like technology the student needs to bring with them?
That is up to you guys. I wouldn't, unless you're an avid note taker and want to track everything you do, write a journal or something. But once again, you're in a room with 4 to 6 other kids. You do have a locker, and you can lock things up. But in a room with that many kids, about the size of 2 vans, it's really difficult to keep track of your valuables. If you want to, I had a gentleman come for adult space camp for the blind years ago who took one of those old AFB tape recorders.
Oh, those things.
And he had a harness that he made, and it fit on the front of his chest. And everything he did, everywhere he went, he had his recorder on his tape player. So he got, I ended up with like 26 tapes. He has every word spoken that week. So, I mean, wow. If you're into some of that, you can, you know, come up with things. But, you know, for the most part, you don't really need to bring something with you. We try to provide, we have Perkins Braille writers for you if you need to take notes on something. So I wouldn't worry yourself with that. But and once again, if you want to do that, there's certainly ways to get it taken care of.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Dan. I'm sorry, I forgot your name for a second. Thank you for coming on the show. We're starting to wrap up here. Is there a way that people can get in contact with you, find out more information about SciViz?
Yeah, well, let me say, first of all, we hope to have the program the last week of September this year. We've had some phone conversations with Space Camp at this point. So I think Trina and I will be down there in June to sort of look over everything to make sure we're on the right track with materials and such. But we have a website called sciviz.org, sciviz.org. That will have all the latest announcements on it. We have a Facebook page, a SciViz Facebook page for students and parents and anyone interested. But I want people to answer questions when they get asked those questions to be a member of that, because we have kids on that program and I want to make sure we don't get anybody on there who doesn't need to be. And there's a chaperone SciViz page as well that we have. And that's a great place for teachers who haven't been before to come in and ask questions about, you know, what should they bring? How should they prepare? and all of that. And my email is sciviz.oates, O-A-T-E-S, at gmail.com. And my phone number is 304-851-5680. And people can call me anytime of the day or night. If I'm awake, I'll answer the phone.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, for the record, we have things. We don't have as much, but we do have a Twitter and an Instagram, which is all at KSS Podcast.
I think we have a Twitter. Jim Allen runs that. I don't do Twitter, so I don't know anything about it. And we usually just have it'll be like at SciViz2021 when we do it. Nothing we keep open the whole time.
Okay, sounds good. One other thing I'd like to mention, speaking about SciViz and Space Camp, a couple students and I, when we went to SciViz 2 years ago in 2019, we wrote an article for the Kansas State School for the Blind blog that details the different experiences that we had there. We reflected on that past week, and we will link that in the show notes when this episode is published. So when you look at this episode, you can also go look at the testimonials that the two other students and I wrote. One of the students, Jordan Walker, was on the podcast about 4 episodes ago. So that is also available for you to look at your leisure.
Okay. And we have a lot of that same kind of thing on sciviz.org as well.
Oh, good. Cool.
And if you want to send that link to Jim Allen over the website, he will put it on our website as well. So.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you for coming on the show. We will talk to you guys sometime in the future to our listeners. Thank you for listening, and have a good day.
Yeah. I hope you guys can come this year.
Oh yes. That'll be exciting.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, everybody.
Yep. Bye.